Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
John, great opportunity to be together today. We've got someone from what many of us would call a bit of a unique industry, even though we all know about this particular industry. So we're looking forward to learning from him today.
Yeah, excited. Very excited to listen to Sammy Davis, the Global Vice President of Papa John's. And so, Sammy, welcome. And tell us a little bit about how you got your start in safety.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I just want to say thank you all for the opportunity. It's great to be here. And just a little bit about me. I originally had plans to go to med school. That was the plan. I wanted to be a trauma surgeon. Went to U of L, University of Louisville, and during that process, life happens, things happen. I realized real quick that I couldn't pick and choose the med school I wanted to go to, that they kind of chose you. So I didn't like that aspect of it. So I had the opportunity to become a paramedic. It was during that time a few things happened. I had an opportunity to get into, with one of my degrees, it was a safety engineering degree that I got from Indiana University. Had an opportunity to get into the construction world. So that was a little bit less taxing than what working the streets were every single day. I loved that job. If I could do it physically today and make the money I make today, I'd still be doing it today. But during that time when I was in construction, I received a letter from IU about this safety program they had.
Indiana University,
yes. And I'll just be transparent. I thought, well, I know everything there is to know about safety because I've been a paramedic for years, so I know everything there is to know about safety. I can do this, and it'd be an easy degree, get through this, and be great. I learned real quick that I didn't know anything about safety. I knew a lot about pre-hospital medicine, but not so much about safety. So I enrolled. And once I finished that degree, I met some really, really intriguing people. Dr. Earl Blair at Indiana University was a mentor of mine throughout the whole program. He was actually the one that convinced me to get my master's, come back to Indiana University and got my master's. During that time, I took a leap of faith and applied for a director of safety position. Don't know that I was qualified, but obviously someone there felt that I was.
And they chose you?
And they chose me. So, you know, one of the things that we'll talk about eventually is the business aspect. But, you know, that was where I learned real quick that I really didn't know a lot about the business aspect of being a director of safety. You know, they give you this thing called a budget and P&Ls. And, like, I didn't have Google or Siri or anything like that to say, what's a P&L? So I had to figure all that out. So it was during that time, spent a lot of time at that company when I got recruited into oil and gas. Whole different arena. Got to travel the world with the oil and gas company that I was with. It was a great opportunity. But I learned more and more about what safety actually meant, who OSHA was, who EPA was. Learned all that. At CETA, the company I worked for in oil and gas, I had the opportunity to work on an ERP. And it was a redevelopment of the entire safety program, entire safety department, the processes, everything. So fast forward a little bit, Kelly Harwish was the program manager. I was assigned a business architect, didn't know what a business architect was. So I learned real quick, you know, the things like swim lanes and whose responsibility and RACI and all this other stuff. So this was all new information for me, and I'm like a sponge just absorbing it. And I'm like, hey, I know what the confined space standard is, but I didn't know anything about RACI, you know? So it was a great opportunity. But what I learned then is the academic programs that we send safety professionals that they graduate college, they teach you a lot of the fundamentals, the standards, where to find things of that nature, industrial hygiene. Nobody ever teaches you how to put a return on investment plan together. So just some of the things I stuck in the back of my head, and I said, you know, later on in life, this is the things we need to be teaching the new professionals and getting them more up to speed on. So was traveling a lot, probably 80% of my time in oil and gas all around the world. I received a phone call from a recruiter, and she was recruiting for a director of safety for Papa John's. Didn't know anything at all. All I knew is the pizza, and honestly, was one of my favorite pizzas at the time.
That's a start.
It is. So not knowing anything about the company other than, hey, they deliver pizzas. Didn't know anything about supply chain, didn't know anything about any of that. We met, and she went through these requirements that they were wanting for this position. And just, I mean, they wanted a CSP. They wanted a master's degree. They wanted 10 years of experience. They wanted multi-location experience. But they were paying like what you would pay an entry-level person right out of the gate. And as interesting as it was, I was doing pretty good in oil and gas because oil and gas is oil and gas. So I had a conversation with the recruiter, and I said, look, listen, I said, I'm probably not your guy. I said, but let me help you out. And I that was where the whole BCSP came into play. I shared with them the salary survey that they do. And I said, you can go in there and you can plug in everything that you want, all the requirements that you're looking for. And it's going to tell you what the national average is. You can even break it down into region, whatever. And I said, you know, that might give you a better idea of what you should be paying. I didn't even charge them for that consulting fee either. So,
and the end result?
The end result was they called me back. They actually, they called me up for an interview, and here I am 11 years later.
I want to come back to something that you said around your mentor strategy. As you know, that's something that is near and dear to my heart. Talk to me a little bit about, as you were moving through EMS going towards safety, how did that strategy evolve for you? Because I think it probably over the course of time, who you were selecting, it's important for folks to understand, I think, and you have a really nice sight on this. It's important for folks to understand that those mentors are critical to your success. So mm-hmm. who you select and how you prepare that are going to be big. So can you talk a little bit about how you kind of designed that or how that might have been designed for you?
Absolutely. You know, in the EMS world, it's kind of a paramilitary kind of environment. So you really don't get to pick and choose. You have your supervisors, you have your leaders. We'll talk about leaders and managers here in a little bit, but you know, there's certain skill sets that you need to be comfortable with as a paramedic, because you're making split second decisions that can result in somebody's life. So what I would typically try to do is I would find things that I was not the best at. You know, if you think about what paramedics go through, you're expected to treat someone going down the road 75, 80 mile an hour in the back of a bouncing ambulance, and you're still expected to start that IV or get that intubation or, you know, do CPR, any of those things. So things that I had that I felt that I wasn't the best at, I would find people that were really good at that. And that's who I would try to attach myself to. And that was early on, because I figured if I was going to learn, might as well learn from people that are doing it well. The oil and gas side, at that point, I had experience in safety, so I knew the fundamentals of safety. I knew that real well. But it was the business side of it that I struggled with. Like, you know, you can read a P&L, but do you really know what it means? Do you know what forecasting is? Do you know what all that stuff means? So I would try to attach myself to people that knew that better than me. One of the themes you'll hear me say multiple times, if there was a formula in safety, it's safety equals relationships. It has to. That's the formula. And I know you said it in your podcast, relationships are critical for multiple reasons. But if you can put, you know, you've got people like paramedics, you've got safety professionals. If you are confident in your job, some people look at that as arrogance or cockiness or whatever, but if you're confident in your job, you want to get better. So in order to get better, you attach yourself to people that know a little bit more about it than you do. And I think if you have those relationships, you're much better off in the long run. So that kind of gets me through the whole business side of things. Once I became like a senior director and I was starting to get more involved with like the executive leadership team, that's a different speak. So, like, you've got to be able to adapt to who you're speaking to. Are you doing a presentation for the executive leadership team in a boardroom, or are you doing a presentation, a training with staff that you know you need to be more intimate with or whatever, because the staff wants to know the meat. The leadership team, hey, give it to me high level. What are the facts? How much is it going to cost me? You know, so you got to be able to change that. But if you have good relationships with both sides of that, I think you're accepted a lot better.
I would say that's a bit, John, like what we talked earlier between us, the Gumby approach, being able to be flexible and adjust. And I will call your attention, Sammy, you really displayed the spirit of humility to be willing to seek out people that knew stuff more than you, information more than you, and gravitate toward them and say, teach me, show me, I need to learn from you.
There's this mindset of psychological safety, you know, and that's not the safety world. You're not going to hear about OSHA, but that's psychological safety. I really think, and this is Sammy's opinion, but I really think that if I display that, those that report to me are going to feel much more comfortable coming to me and asking me, hey, how do I do this or how do I get better? If they've seen me do it, then they should be comfortable asking me.
Which just reminds all the safety professionals who are listening to us today, the power of watching one person, power of observing. Sammy, as you know, I work with Dale Carnegie, and of course we are very in tune with the importance of building relationships with them. And in Dale Carnegie's principles, for example, he talks about becoming genuinely interested in other people and even talking in terms of their interest. What do you see that does for people when we do that?
So one of the things the answer to your question is I think that builds a safety net to where that they feel comfortable coming to that person. Now, that's good and bad. I don't have to worry about underreporting injuries because they feel very comfortable telling us everything. The problem is they feel very comfortable telling us everything. So now you have to filter this to see, you know, is this safety related? Do you have an issue at home? Are you, you know, you have to be able to filter that. But the end of the day, I'd much rather do that than I had always trying to figure out, you know, what happened or why didn't you tell me this, or, you know, what made you uncomfortable, or those things. So I'd much rather deal with that side of it.
Yeah. So one of my questions to that is, you know, as you build this relationship, now you're relatable to these folks. You know, talk a little bit about, in my mind, what comes to the forefront is the power of the quick win. Mm-hmm. Right. And so as you looked at that cascading effect, you know, how did that win take shape, kind of being newer to the company and being out there as it kind of broadcasted over the organization?
Yeah, that's great. You got to understand that, you know, we were starting from scratch, basically. Now, there was some processes in place, but we were starting from scratch. So we didn't have those relationships. So we were having to build those as we went. And I think putting that foundation in and connecting with the team members, you know, I look forward 11 years, you know, from 11 years back. I think that's why we've been able to do what we've done. And I think that's why if we ask a director to do something, or we ask an employee, you know, their opinion, they're willing to do it. You know, now, don't get me wrong, there's pushback on some things. But for the most part, I've been in organizations, you know, doing consulting or what have you, where, you know, the safety person, they weren't even welcome to meetings because if we bring them in here, it's going to stall everything. And I think that's the kind of mindset we've got to get past. And I think to answer your question, we've done that. I feel like our safety folks, field, corporate, training, all that, I feel like there's a level of respect, may not be the right word, but there's a level of respect that when they ask someone to do something, even though if they don't want to, that they will do it. So, you know, that kind of brings me back to leadership because, you know, when I was anybody that chooses to go through a doctorate in leadership, I think the one question that you probably ought to be able to answer is, what's your definition of leadership?
And yours is?
So mine is the ability, keyword being ability, the ability to cast a shared vision so compelling that others are willing to follow you. I think there's this mindset of leadership is, you know, it's appointed by title when it's really not. You know, if anybody that's listening, if you want to know if you're a leader or not, just look over your shoulder. Are people willing to follow you? Mm-hmm. If they're not, you probably
it's a lonely day in the park. It's a lonely day on the parking lot if they're not willing exactly. to follow you. Just stand there by yourself.
Exactly. So I think knowing that has probably been the biggest learning that I had in that whole journey of that PhD program.
And Sammy, in my observations, there are people that are really, really good at developing a genuine relationship and a proper relationship with the working force. Some folks struggle developing that proper relationship with the C-suite and higher. Would you describe that? Give us some tips and advice that you've seen that could help people.
Yeah, so one thing I would say is be yourself. You know, I've seen so many people that they morph into a totally different human being when they're with the C-suite folks. I don't know if it's because you want to impress someone or try to impress someone, or if you just don't know. So be yourself. And then second of all, you don't have to impress anyone. They put you in this position for a reason. So you've already impressed somebody to be where you're at. So be yourself and just, you know, make them understand that what they're asking you about, you're the subject matter expert. They genuinely want to know your thoughts and your opinions. So don't try to over-talk them or talk above them or anything. Just give them information they're looking for. And I think you'll be fine.
Now, let's just be open, though, with our folks, though, here. If we are not ourselves and if we're spending all our time trying to impress, what could be the potential downsides of that for people? Let's just paint the picture of warning so people yep. see that.
So I will start with saying, just understand that they've asked you whatever the question was they asked you to provide information on. They ask you that for a reason. They don't want to know life history. And the one thing that I would say to any safety professional out here is, I've learned working with our past couple of CEOs, is it's best to tell a story. So, you know, one of the notes that I had taken off your, or John's off yours, was, you know, associating this with the people and telling a story. So regardless of what you've been asked to do, don't just go in with just bullet points and reading a PowerPoint or whatever. Tell the story. Why is this important? How is it going to impact employees? How is it going to impact the C-suite? How is it going to impact the organization? But tell the story and relate everything back to that.
Some people are afraid, though. They say, story, that's too much like Jack and Jill and things like that. What's the power of the story,
Sam? Well, you asked me what worked, so I'm telling you, telling the story works.
Why does the story work?
I think most people relate to that. If you're dealing with a C-suite or a board of directors or something like that, their every day they spend in the office is dealing with high-level conversations and numbers and strategies and this. They don't get a story from the team members. So when you have that opportunity, tell them how it really impacts the company. And I think you gain a little bit of recognition from them. You asked a minute ago, what's the downside to this? So I'll give you two. There's a positive downside to this. One, if you do it well, they're going to continue to expect it. So they're going to ask you to do it more often. If you don't do it well, you will know, because you won't be asked to do it again. So
yeah. Quick feedback.
Quick feedback, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, I love this part of it. The one thing that, you know, to your point around the storytelling and the advice, and I'd ask for your feedback on this, is, you know, going out, making sure that you have a story, but what your story really is here's where we are, here's where we want to be, here's what I need to get there, and here are the benefits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, framing it in that, is that kind of what your takeaway would be for advice for folks that maybe don't have oversight to their story as they're given these presentations?
Absolutely. You're spot on. One of the challenges with what you just said is part of that story is, what do I need to get to that end of the road? And I'm going to go back to this business piece of safety. One of the challenges that I think academia has in the safety profession, you can look at just about every curriculum around the U.S. that has an occupational health and safety program. Some offer a minor in business. They'll offer that. Some offer an economics class. But you don't get a lot of that business acumen during your college courses in safety. But yet, here we're sitting here talking, you know, how is this successful? Well, you have to be able to go in and explain to them why it's important, which I think you can do. You have to be able to explain to them how I'm going to get there, which I think you can do. But then you have to explain to them the numbers, the return on investment, you know, why is this going to benefit the company? And you know, what's it going to cost us? And how are we going to get our money back? So that's a huge thing.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to come back to it. Two kind of thoughts for, I'd be curious your input on, is one, how can we as senior level professionals influence the academia? And what does that kind of relationship look like? You know, when I think about what you're talking about, business, marketing, communication, three core skills that don't necessarily show up in some of these accredited programs. And then really the second one is, as you have employees on your team, how are you supporting them, recognizing that they may be coming in with a gap?
So I'm going to pull a statement from you. You have to sell it. You have to be a salesperson. And when I heard that in your podcast, I thought, man, that's, hadn't thought of it. I'm horrible at sales. I couldn't sell anything. So, but then I get to thinking about it, and I'm like, man, over the years, that's exactly what I've done. I've been a salesperson for safety. And, you know, I think we get so caught up in the day-to-day minutia of what we've got to do. There's always a fire to put out somewhere. I think we forget about that sales piece as to, are we doing anything to progress this along, or are we doing anything to help our team get to the next step? So in your podcast, you know, being that salesperson and getting them, I think that was something that stuck with me out of that.
So for the person listening who says, I'm busted, I'm not good at business. I know regulations. I know that stuff down, but I'm not good. Could you give one or two initial steps? What would be some initial steps you would encourage somebody to do who says, I need to learn?
Absolutely. And I wouldn't even go with, I'm not good. I may not just be as good as I should be. My advice would be is, you know, don't be afraid to ask for that help. So you'll have leaders that can spot that. And, you know, I may look at John and go, hey, he's doing great on the safety side. But every time I ask him questions about financials or something, even though he's the director of safety, he's a little shaky on that. So I may start involving him in conversations I'm having at a higher level. You know, we do budget reviews. I may bring him in. I do. We have a meeting every month with my three directors that we go over our financials with the FP&A person, and they have an opportunity to ask questions. So I think to answer the question, I think the advice I would give is, if you don't think that you're strong in that area, reach out. You can do that internally. There's courses that you can take to help. Again, I put a little bit of this on academia because we don't prepare them. So you sometimes have to go out on your own and do it yourself. So there are courses you can take. But man, I mean, there's so many resources in-house that you can touch on.
And many times different people, and we talk about being somebody mentoring somebody else, there are different people at different levels, some who just say, I'm too busy to help out. But there are many people that have a real heart if somebody is hungry and open and wants to learn, and they would commit some time to help somebody. It just takes a measure of humility to say, I could be better at this. I'm not as good as this. I need some help. What would you suggest to that internal person?
Yeah.
That'll make a huge difference.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it's as the leader's responsibility, I need to know where to point them. So if you were to come to me and you were to say, hey, I keep hearing you all talk about P&Ls and variance and year over year, month over month, quarter over quarter. I said, you know, I want to know more about that. So my answer would be is, okay, well, first off, when we have our reviews, I want you to sit in and be a part of that. But if you have questions, I'm going to give you a copy of the P&L. This isn't the secret sauce. Everybody gets, I mean, you can have this. Look at this. If you have questions, go to John Doe, Jane Doe, and ask them. Because they're the ones that are in the finance department that's going to help you with this. We keep talking about, you know, numbers. But there's strategies. There's, you know, goal planning. There's all kinds of things that people can ask for help on that the resources are out there. You just have to be willing to ask for it because you probably weren't given that during introduction to safety or investigation training or, you know, OSHA 101.
Yeah. And I think the one thing to add is that some folks find themselves where they don't have a person like you, Sammy, and they may feel stuck where they're not getting that level of support. And the one thing I also heard you talk about is not all your mentors were company mentors, that you were active in seeking out other folks that might not even be at your company, but you know that they have a specific skill and you kind of adopted them in and asked them about their mentoring process. And for those folks that are listening and you're trying to figure out where can we get mentors, I don't feel like I can get that where I'm at right now. You know, do you have some advice for those maybe external to your company?
Yeah, I told myself on the way up here I was not going to talk academia, but I am for just a second. So John Cutter is one of my favorite change management authors. And in his process, he talks about the big wins, the short-term wins. He talks about that. But the one thing he does is he says you have to build a guiding coalition. You have to build a support staff around you. He doesn't say you have to build a support staff with your coworkers, your boss. So what I would suggest to everyone is build that coalition around you. You don't have to know everything. And I think that's I was told one time by a CEO, someone asked a question in a meeting, and he goes, I don't have to know that. That's why I hired you. So, you know, it's you don't have to know everything. I think safety professionals, we want to know, we don't want to put on the spot. So when we're asked about standards, you know, you just have to know where to find it. You don't have to be able to recite it. And I think that's important. You don't have to know everything. Just have a resource that you can tap into to get the answer.
So the idea I'm hearing you say is set aside your ego and be willing to say, ask.
Yeah, I'm just going to be real transparent here. I think if you ask anybody that knew me 10 years ago, they're surprised that I would even say set aside your ego because I was told once I exuded a lot of confidence. I don't.
That was a very tactful way to say you were obnoxious.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I thought. I was like, okay, I like the word. I can go with that. So you're right. We've got to put if we want to progress this profession and we want to, you know, hey, let's just be clear. We're all not going to be here forever. So there's people that's going to step into our shoes at some point. I hope we're all really good at succession planning and preparing that person. Which, you know, that's another topic. You know, people are scared to death to develop somebody else because, well, what if they take my job? I want that next person to be able to take my job. That's the whole point.
And by the way, this leads us to a bit of another topic that I heard you in our pre-call talk about is elevating the role of the safety professional. Now, we're not talking about being the majesty of the world, but you gave an interesting example how sometimes people get plugged into safety roles, not because they're really especially qualified.
That's unfortunately true.
Because I've seen what you talked about, I related to. I said, I've seen that before.
Yeah. If you look at at really successful organizations. They understand the importance of that role. I'm very fortunate that I have a leadership team that places a high priority on that. Most of the time, I feel like I'm a part of that group. I know there's a lot of people that don't have that. So, again, I'm going to stipulate I'm fortunate to have that. But at some point, I think we need to elevate this role up. I know not all organizations can do that, either financial, either structurally, you know. But your larger organizations, there is a place to place priority on employee health, safety, security, to a point where that's a C-level position. And I guess I would go back to, you know, those roles, for the most part, are looked at as an expense. You know, we're not making money for the company. But I would argue that and say we're saving you. We're not costing you money. We're saving you money. You see these CEOs that's in the magazines, you know, that understand safety. And I know ours, you know, he's been amazing since he's been there. And I've got a great relationship with him. But you see these CEOs that understand safety. And they want that information. So you remember as a kid, we played the phone game where I would tell you something, you would go whisper it in your ear, you'd go whisper it in somebody else's ear, and then by the time it got back to you, the story's changed. Well, sometimes that happens. Like, they'll bring me something, I'll go to my boss and tell them, they'll go to their boss and tell them, and then eventually by the time it gets to the person that really wanted to know, although the story is probably relatively the same, all the details may not be there. Well, that can be fixed with making safety a priority on the leadership team. Now you're getting the information from the horse's mouth, per se.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to safety as a value mm-hmm. of an organization. You know, Merle, you and I talked about CHROs and CISOs and chief sustainability officers and the spotlight different organizations are getting because of different world events or current events and how that shifts. Sammy, talk a little bit about value proposition, I think is what may drive that conversation to a point where you can start talking about a CEHSO mm-hmm. or a chief safety officer, because now you know, and I would also add your thoughts about, so it is a cost savings, it's a cost avoidance, it's a reputational asset, right? In addition, it could be revenue creation because the same principles that help you in safety create operational excellence.
Absolutely.
And so talk about that like value proposition. How would you kind of craft that message?
Yeah, so you know we're involved in a lot of the visions, the mission statements, things of that nature. So again, I've got the advantage of working for an organization that puts a priority on that. But speaking to folks that may not have that same advantage, I think this might be a good place to insert what we talked about earlier about the whole safety first thing. I struggle seeing organizations that you walk in and they've got these signs everywhere that says safety first. So the very first question that I want to ask is, well, tell me your opinion on safety first. Mm. Oh, it's top priority. It's in our vision statement. It's our number one value. Safety is a priority. And I'm like, really? So then the next question I want to ask like their CEO or their COO is, so what you're telling me is I can go out back and I can stop your production line for 30 minutes and talk about safety. Oh, well, wait a minute now. Hold on. We don't want to stop the production line. I mean, I'm like, okay, well, so safety's first unless we stop the production line, and that comes first. So you're telling me I can go out here and I can stop all your logistics for 30 minutes and talk to all your drivers. Now, they're going to be late getting out of here for 30 minutes. Oh, well, hold on now. We can't have you doing that because then we're going to have late routes. Okay, so you're telling me that safety's only first when it don't impact operations or when it doesn't impact logistics or when it doesn't, and you can just keep filling in the blanks. So when you talk about value, you know, value, you have to fix that. You can't put those signs up and say, we put this value on safety, i.e., you know, unless these things happen. Then safety comes second.
And that is an important discussion that safety professionals need to consider and need to start planting that seed and start, through the stories, pitching that idea and selling that idea that it's a value and not a priority, because priorities change every day. But they have to instruct people. They have to teach that, and they have to start that process going. Because some of the things we've just talked about here, they're all out there listening to us right now say, oh, yeah, man, I wish my people over here above me would hear this. Let's have them listen to this right now, because this guy Sammy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And they all want that. But at some point, Sammy, the safety professional that's not in that organization is going to have to decide, can I do something to work toward getting us there? What advice would you have for that person? Because I know they're listening to us right now. They are frustrated.
So I would say one thing. As the safety professional, we have got to stop using cliche words. I've heard buy-in. We got to get buy-in. I've heard culture. You know, we've got to change our culture. Okay, those are, I guess I would come back and ask you, well, how do you get buy-in? We go back to the business side of safety. We don't train safety professionals on how to gain buy-in. Goes back to the relationship. If you've got a great relationship with your ops folks or with your legal team or with your whatever, it might, you fill in the blank, buy-in becomes easier. But what definition do you put on what is buy-in? So that's one of the things.
And so that goes to a Carnegie principle I mentioned earlier, but apply in a different way. Talk in terms of the other person's interest. Not just, well, this is what I think is important. This is what I think important. What are their interests? What is a big deal to them? And then as you start to use that verbiage and those examples, then you're able to get more connection and the relationship, not just buddy-buddy, but the relationship, because we're talking about the things that are important to them.
So you talk about their interest.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that we can do as safety professionals that I have seen, when you talk about we have to get their interest, here's an idea. Why don't we involve them in the solution? It is frustrating to see decisions be made, strategies be set, and we don't even involve the people that's doing the work. I mean, if you want the answer to the test, get the person that's doing the work to help you with the solution. They know it way better than you. I've sat on a task force to make a decision on, you know, this area, and we don't even have one of the people that's doing the job on the task force. So I think we get caught up in this corporate America. You know, we get caught up sitting in our offices and we're making great decisions in these glass boxes that we go to every day. And I think we forget about the people that has to actually put that into play.
Could you think of an example that you've seen like that? Because again, one of the other Carnegie principles is let the other person do a great deal of the talking rather than us just spewing out everything. Could you give us a real life example that comes to your mind of where you were able to help get some the frontline people to get some input on that?
So I can talk on a topic at Papa John's. I want to go back a little bit further than that though, because I think I've got one that when we were in oil and gas, we had anywhere roughly from 15 to 30 folks on the job site. One of the things that we did during safety meetings was we took safety suggestions from the field, and we would vote on them, and we would decide which ones were viable, which ones were not. I mean, you know, anytime you do that, you're going to get everything from, hey, we need this, to, hey, I want Mountain Dew in the soda machine.
Well, that's so high level.
That can be important.
That can be important. But you know, the thing about it is when we would choose someone's idea, it wasn't that we just took that idea and went and implemented it. I went back and said, hey, Merle, your idea was selected. How do we implement this? That's your job now, is to tell me how you would see this come to fruition. And I think when you allow people to not only have the idea, but to work on the implementation piece of it, and they actually see their idea come to fruition, you get a lot better buy-in, we'll use that word, from everybody else, because now you've got people that's willing to throw ideas out there because, you know, John Doe got all this recognition for his. And the one example that I always go back to in oil and gas, we had these vacuum trucks, and you had to climb up on the back of this vacuum truck to empty the dust collector out of it. And we were either using like a 6-foot step ladder, this, that, and the other. Well, somebody just simply said, well, why don't we just put a ladder on the side of the truck that you can climb right up to it instead of having to carry an external ladder? And literally a $40 welding job to put a ladder on the side of this truck fixed everything. So every vacuum truck in the fleet was done that way across the entire U.S. So now when this employee who was out of Griffith, Indiana, would go to L.A., you know, somebody is saying, hey, man, thanks for that idea, man. That's been great. So I think when you involve people in the ideas and in the fixing of things, you get so much more out of that.
Carnegie principle, let the other person feel like the idea is his or hers, where they get to feel and know that is. And one other byproduct that I could see for that is that certainly there are times they say, brilliant idea, yeah. But when they say, how could you implement this? All of a sudden they realize, oh, this isn't quite as easy mm-hmm. as I thought it would be.
But that's good, though, because then they see maybe why you hadn't done it before, because it wasn't that easy.
That feels like what we used to talk about as the pigeon analogy. The one with the problem comes in, has the problem, but then leaves. And so how do you get the pigeon involved so that they can't just leave? That they can actually
dump all over you.
That's exactly right.
So I was going to wrap that into that. Okay, just in our final thoughts, and this has been a solid, solid discussion. There are people at all different levels that are listening to this, and we have some younger professionals that are up and coming. If you could give a piece of advice to people perhaps brand new in the profession, they want to grow and they're kind of hitting some walls or whatever like that. What would be a piece of advice you think that maybe you wish you had gotten when you were younger, or did you give to somebody else?
We could have started with that, and we could have spent the whole time talking about that. But the one area we didn't get to talk about was just this whole idea of safety leadership. When I went through my doctoral program, I had this light pop on when we started talking about the different styles of leaders. And I'm not going to get into all the different styles and safety leadership in depth, but when I realized what type of leader, what style leader I was, that changed everything for me. Because then I got to quit focusing on trying to improve things that wasn't me. But when it came to transformational leadership, and if you look at, you know, safety leadership research, you'll see that comes up a lot. But, you know, influencing, motivating, intellectual stimulation, challenging your people and considering each individual and not just the team, that changed the way I did a lot. So I guess my final thought leaving here was, man, just learn who you are and don't worry about the ancillary stuff, because that's going to come, you know, that's going to come. But learn who you are and learn your style of leadership. And once you know that, then you can start developing not only yourself, but then you understand why you're making the decisions you make and why you're the way you are, and maybe why people don't relate to you or why they do relate to you. But understand that.
And that willingness not to try to imitate everybody else, to say,
absolutely,
this is who I am, I'll develop who I am, that gives people opportunity to lead and to be themselves.
Yep.
Thank you so much for this time and opportunity to be together.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sammy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We were very fortunate to have Sammy come in, and he just gave us a broad variety from his experiences of paramedic, construction, safety, into oil and gas, and then into the pizza world. Well, one of the things that I noticed that he really emphasized was the idea of let's let the people have their ideas. Let's draw the ideas from the people. Let the people feel like the idea is theirs. Because when you do that, it's like the baby, man. This is my baby. It's beautiful. I wanted to go. That was a great thought that he gave to us.
Yeah, no, and I think for me, it was very clear how precise and methodical he was in his professional development. And, you know, the one thing I think, Merle, that stuck with me was this concept around a guiding coalition and how important that was for his growth. And so that's something that I'll take away.
Great lessons for all of us today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your host, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman, and John Fisher, Director of Environmental Strategy and Corporate EHS at Duke Energy Corporation. Executive produced by Joel Bergai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Grio and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt. Social media support from Braylon Morgan. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.